Shouldn't be laughing, Stevie.
Your intros are second to none.
Buddy, what can I say, man? Ladies and gentlemen, we're back. Episode number 4, 61 Soul Podcast. Before we jump into it, quick couple sponsor ad reads. Today's episode is brought to you by Lactigo, trusted by athletes around the world, from beer leaguers like me to the pros like Stevie. Lactigo is a fast-acting topical gel that helps reduce muscle fatigue and soreness so you can recover quicker and perform at your best. No more excuses, no more sluggish legs, just better performance. Try it today, feel the difference. Visit Lactigo.com, code OLEXI for 10% off your first order. Take your game to the next level. This episode is also brought to you by HealthQuest Physical Therapy. Whether you're rehabbing from an injury, looking to improve mobility, or just want to keep your body moving the way it should, HealthQuest's expert team is here for you. Don't wait until the pain sidelines you. Visit HealthQuestPT.com and get back in the game, buddy.
Read. What a...
You know, I was always a decent reader and reading comprehension guy, but when the mic's on and I'm going through the sponsor, it's like one little misstep or breath at the wrong time and the whole thing can just fall. But go get some Lactigo.
Breath work is so important. Actually, I'm learning that more and more being in the studio with my wife. It's funny how when you breathe and controlling your breathing, it changes everything.
Well, isn't that what they said? Do you remember Kenny G, the clarinet or saxophone player? They always said that was his thing, is that he could breathe in through his nose and out through his mouth at the exact same time. So I'm not.
Well, I know when my wife was with Lou Pearlman, and part of their training was singing while they were running on a treadmill.
Was Lou Pearlman that he's the guy who started the Backstreet Boys, right?
Backstreet Boys, NSYNC. He was the originator of the boy band.
Was that like what New Kids on the Block too? I think now we're really aging ourselves, or dating ourselves, I should say.
We are really dead. He had LFO.
Delightful O-Town. Ones. O-Town, buddy.
O-Town. Orlando, that's where we first settled when we moved here to Florida.
I can't believe we're getting off on this foot talking about boy bands, but O-Town, they were actually, this is wild because I watched that show. They were the first making the band.
That is correct.
Liquid Dreams was the big single.
Liquid Dreams was the big single. And I remember the music video like it was yesterday.
Absolutely. So do I. Man, that's embarrassing. So, all right, enough boy band talk. What have you been up to? The last we talked, we were having some technical difficulties and you were in Miami, actually in recording out of your vehicle.
Yes, I was out. Last time we filmed, I was in the driver's seat of the vehicle, pulled over, stopped, definitely not driving. But we spent 10 days down in Miami. My wife was recording some music, so it was a little tough to find a quiet area in the studio with the speakers that they have. That's a pretty tall task.
And I was reading in Us Weekly that you guys were living out of. And that's not even like, I'm not lying. I literally read it from yahoo.com into Us Weekly right there on the front page today that you were down there and she recorded something like 14.
Yeah, I think she ended with 16 songs in 10 days. So she was knocking it out. But somebody reached out to me and said, hey, we have rumors that, you know, since Brooke was left out of the will, that you and her are living out of a hotel with your twins. And, you know, the media blows things way out of proportion.
Well,
so the reports were that me and Brooke were essentially homeless, living in a hotel. And I had to clean things up and just tell them, no, we're actually down here recording some music. And that's the reason we are living the hotel life.
Well, buddy, I think living in a hotel in Miami might be a lot better than living a lot of other places. So even if that were the case, we don't judge here.
It's very true. And with our travels, my professional hockey career, her travel, we are definitely used to the hotel life. So it feels like a second home to us. And the one thing I love about my wife is we can make the best of any situation.
Yeah, we're probably staying at different types of hotels, but me, big Hilton Honors member guy. I think I've got 8 more nights until I hit gold.
Mike, you know us all too well. It's coming from the guy who only flies Delta and is giving me a hard time for flying Southwest.
Only.
We stayed in a Hilton, and we actually did end up changing hotels because the first one was a little bit rough around the edges, but we're definitely not Ritz-Carlton people.
Once in a while, you got to splurge, and I choose to spend my money if we're flying. I will pay exceptionally more to be just moderately more comfortable. So that's where I have to just indulge.
And that's where we differ. I was the $79 Spirit flight guy, but grab a backpack and go. Obviously, that's changed. The 79 $79 flight is now $379. So that changes things a little bit.
There's a video floating around of you as well. You're going to laugh at this, where you refused to pay an extra baggage fee and you wore, how many layers did you have on?
I think it was 17 layers in total between the top and the bottom. I forget where I was traveling to. Oh, I was flying to Nashville, and I think I was taking a bunch of stuff back with me, and I didn't have an extra bag to throw it in, so I had nothing else. There was nothing else I could do other than put it on. So she said, I think it was like 13 pounds overweight. So I went to the bathroom and I said, all right, I'll be right back. And I came back, and I think the total count was 17 layers. I know I had eight or nine tops on with four pairs of shorts, three pairs of pants.
Just creative problem solving is what that is.
It's the first time I had the air conditioning blasting on me on a flight, but I think it was worth it.
They call me Mikey Sky Miles, gold, platinum, whatever. I got it.
Well, that's why I'm excited to fly with you, sir.
Yeah,
Mike.
Yeah. So soon enough. And we'll get into that. I don't know if we're going to touch base on it, unless you want to tell everybody kind of what's going on in your world currently.
Well, we just spent 10 days in Miami. We got back home here a few days ago, just in time to pack up. And then we actually fly out to Vegas for 2 months. So we'll be spending the next 2 months out in Vegas. And our son and daughter's first flight is going to be to the, I don't want to say the Sin City, but I'll say the City of Lights. How about that?
Are you able to talk about what you're going to be doing out there, or is that all still on a bit of a need-to-know basis?
Yeah, for sure. Obviously, privacy is big to us. You know, we're not ones that like to put ourselves out there. You know, sometimes it comes our way when people are spreading rumors that we're living out of a hotel and things like that. But we're going to Vegas, and there'll be some filming done there and a couple other things. You know, fortunately, I have a lot of great relationships in the city of Vegas, Las Vegas. So it'll be nice to connect with some old friends, and it's a little bit tougher to get to the West Coast now. So it's a great opportunity to connect with some of those friendships and get to spend some time together.
Yeah, I think a couple of your old teammates are out there, and then as well, your former general manager when you played for the Capitals.
Yeah, George. I got to see George at the 50th anniversary for the Washington Capitals, which it was great. He was the guy that gave me my first opportunity with Washington, and just a guy who I really respected for the way he played the game and as a general manager, the way he just creates culture. And I think that's the most important thing for a GM is to create a culture and an identity for a team. And that's definitely what he did. And he gave me an opportunity when, by all accounts, it was late in my career and I was a nobody. So I'm forever thankful for him. And it was the first time when I saw him in Washington, it was the first time I got a chance to really shake his hand and thank him. But I did take care of his kid a couple of years ago in Vegas. And being a non-drinker, George trusted me to take his college-aged student around Las Vegas a little bit. And now they're both out there, and his son actually lives in the city that we'll be staying. So it'll be nice to reconnect with him as well.
Yeah, we're looking forward to that, man. So you mentioned you were at the Washington Capitals 50th anniversary. Oh, it just brings to mind the Red Wings are having their centennial jersey, or pardon me, their centennial season. So 100 years in 1926 to 2026. Did you happen to see any of the news about that? Or did you see the Red Wings new centennial jersey?
I did see the new centennial jerseys, and it's crazy to think that an organization's been around for 100 years. And when you think about that, you put a date on that, you saying 1926, it's pretty incredible. It's pretty incredible. And with that comes so much hockey history and, you know, a rich hockey culture in Detroit.
Were you a fan at all, or did you like the jerseys, or what?
To me, it's so hard to spice up a jersey. And I think the one thing with Red Wings jerseys, I know it's an iconic logo and everybody loves it. It's an original six, but it's two-color palette, which for me, it's really hard to spice up a two-color jersey. You have red and white. If you look around the league, very few teams have only two colors in their jerseys. So there's only so much you can do. Me personally, I'd love to see a little bit more retro in it.
Yeah, sure.
A little bit more historic feel to it. But there's a lot that goes into that. And like I said, it leaves it pretty tough to really redesign or reinvent the wheel. You have to stick to the iconic logo. Obviously, with the league, there's a lot of stipulations and stuff like that that they have to follow. Can't say I'm a big fan of it.
No, dude, and I'm critical. I'm critical of the Wings just because we criticize those we love the most, right? And so growing up a Wings fan, I have this memory of the 75th anniversary jersey of the NHL. It was white with the red stripes going across the horizontal. I mean, I don't think they've topped that one since. Any of the teams, quite frankly. So I don't particularly care for this one. It's fine. I guess I'll give it a 7. A lot of people are saying that it's 10 out of 10. It's amazing. I don't even think it's the third best Red Wings jersey. I liked the Winter Classic one. It was a little bit retro. I liked the 75th anniversary. But you know what else? You lose a point. You lose a point for me. So I'm going to give it a 6. Still having that Priority Waste logo on the jersey. And the, I don't even know who the helmet sponsor is. If it's Meyer or UWM or whoever it is. I'm just a traditionalist when it comes to the hockey and specifically the Red Wings. I don't like it. The Rangers did a nice job.
Yeah, I think sports in general, I mean, when you really look at it from a very, very high level, they're searching hard to find ways to generate revenue to pay these salaries and, you know, between ticket prices. And I think they're pricing the everyday American out of going to games, and it's turning almost, you know, completely corporate. And
100%.
So how do you make up the difference in the rising salaries, the, you know, decline in ticket sales? And then the TV deals aren't necessarily what they used to be either, because a lot of people are, you know, there's so many streaming services and different things like that.
Can't
and
find the games half the time. It's insane. And I have everything, you know?
Well, back when we were growing up, you had like Pass Sports and things
Channel
like
that. Channel 25. And you used to have a pay-per-view. Do you remember? There were certain specific games that were pay-per-view as well.
But you would be like, all right, Detroit's playing Chicago and you have that rivalry and you're sitting down for the complete 2.5 hours, 3 hours.
Yep,
and
the Norris.
I think everybody listening on this podcast knows it's hard to keep anybody's attention for more than 5 minutes now. So what do we do with social media? We're flipping through highlights, right? So I think that affects, you know, it affects ad sales, you know, on the TV deals. It affects the TV deals, you know, and then you have things like the NHL Network that just bundles everything together now too. So I think a lot of that plays into it. So they're using those logos and the sponsorships to try to, you know, generate that revenue. And then ultimately what we talk about the salaries. I mean, those are, once you set a standard, it's tough for salaries to go down.
Sure.
Instead of up.
And so we're definitely going to get into some salary talk and contract talk here coming up. But for me, and I think you'll agree, it's the merch versus the meaning, right? Do those jerseys or those logos actually moving the needle towards fan engagement? Or is it just another distraction to push jerseys, push merch, and quite frankly, nickel and dime the average fan? I was just having this chat with a friend of the show, one of my TDL teammates. It was the same thing. He went to a preseason game. He said it's the only one that he can afford to go to, are these preseason games, because they're at least a little bit more price conscious. Just look them up. The Wings sent out an email that the single game plans or whatever went on sale. I looked up the Fedorov one. Cheapest, get you in the door, $280. Are you kidding me? And that was Ticketmaster. That's not on the resale market. That was strictly the official way to buy it, $280. Last row. At the Joe, we could at least get in for standing room, but I don't know. It's frustrating.
It's frustrating, and it becomes very, very tough to grow the sport and to grow the game as a young kid. If you can't attend an in-person or live event, it becomes really tough to kind of grow and love your hometown team, because you don't have that interaction. You don't have that feel with that. And it becomes very tough to be interested in the sport when it's so far away from you. And that's my perspective. And when you talk about the jerseys, it has to be very, very special now. And I think one thing that we've done starting at the minor league level, especially, is there's so many specialty jerseys now. You know, every season in the East Coast League or the American League, there's 20 jerseys. You have a Star Wars night, you have a SpongeBob night, you have, you know, Groundhog Day jerseys, and, you know, for every holidays. Yeah, for every holiday, there's a specialty jersey, and it kind of takes away from something like a centennial jersey, right? Because the NHL kind of falls in that trap too, and they have, you know, they're auctioning off practice jerseys and warm-up jerseys. And, you know, as a fan, there's there's too many opportunities to have a different, you know, different jerseys where if it, they limited it a little bit, you know, a Centennial jersey may speak to a fan a little bit more for merch sales and
yeah, especially when they're $200. If they're $200, and I don't even know if this player is going to be here in 6 months, man. So it's just tough for me to shake the feeling that jerseys and the logos, they can help strengthen your team identity. They can at times maybe help with fan engagement, I guess, but it's really difficult for me to say that it's not a distraction from the on-ice results or the roster questions. And that doesn't just pertain to the Red Wings. That could be, I mean, pick your team, right? Just right now, because we're talking Wings, it's tough for me to separate whether that it's done for the right reasons, like putting Hockey Town back at center ice. I don't even know that we're Hockey Town. I don't even think we should be claiming that at this moment, right? You've got cities and states that are much more active. Granted, LCA, I guess, is sold out, but it's just not a fun experience for me. And I do have one suggestion, because I want to get your thoughts on this idea. Do you remember the old Montreal Forum where they pulled the glass out behind the bench? Maybe not. Yeah. So I'm thinking maybe that could be a step towards fan engagement. Remove a couple panels of the glass, let the teams know who's in the house, where you're at. Might not be the best idea, but I'm going to pitch that to Bettman.
Yeah, I think there's some safety concerns with that, especially the world we live in today.
Oh, okay. Have fun with me for a second, buddy. Yes. Okay.
I mean, I have too many stories on my end with glass in place.
Yeah, we'll get into that down the road, because I'm thinking of one in particular, but I'm not going to bring it up just yet.
There's a couple, but I definitely think there's different ways to grow and make fans feel more part of it. I mean, I know watching games in Las Vegas, I mean, you go and before the puck even drops, you feel like you went to a Cirque du Soleil show. You know, the atmosphere, the energy, there's a light show, there's all kinds of stuff. And that's with a solid product on the ice. I think, unfortunately, I think places like Hockey Town and, you know, some other, you know, whether it's major league or minor league sports, they rely too heavily on the past and past success, and they fail to reinvent themselves and to rebuild. And I think we may be seeing a touch of that now. So I can't disagree that, you know, this is a slight distraction, and it's a way for them to really kind of try to build buzz around something to do with the Red Wings, but not necessarily the product of the team.
Yeah, well, even Carolina, they're out tailgating before, right? So there are real fans. Here in Detroit, we were supposed to have the District Detroit. That never came around. So my question to you, Stevie, does the nostalgia and the tradition cover up for the results?
I don't think it does, because it's so far removed for everybody watching now. You know, we just touched on it previous in our conversation when we talk about attention span. Now everybody's attention span is so short, we can't think about what happened 5 or 10 years ago or 15 years ago. It's what happened yesterday and what's happening tomorrow. So nobody remembers that history, and that history, we've been living off of that history for a long time. Yeah. And I think far too long. And you're probably a bigger Red Wing fan than I am, but you know and understand that it's been a long time. As much as we'd like to talk about McCarty's goal and, you know, the Stanley Cup victories, I think the last Stanley Cup victory, I was in fifth grade and my mom pulled me out of school to go to the parade.
For me, it's trying to find a balance between the roster construction, the win, and then adding the jerseys on top of that. So it's almost like the whipped cream on the waffles. Whipped cream can hide a really bad waffle. But at the end of the day, if your waffle is bad, the whipped cream's not going to fix it.
For sure. I like that analogy there.
Yeah.
But there's nothing syrup can't fix.
Yeah, you're going to need a hell of a lot of syrup on these jerseys and teams for sure. And so speaking of, I don't want to get tied down too much into that. We obviously know how we feel. I wanted to have a laugh with you, because we were talking about breakfast foods. Have you seen any of the news about the classic Americana restaurant Cracker Barrel? I don't even know if they have them down by you.
I have seen the news, and I pay attention to Cracker Barrel. It's obviously an iconic brand, and I can honestly say there probably wasn't any youth hockey tournament where we didn't hit at least one Cracker Barrel, you know? So I think the games and the merch was a priority over even the food.
The food was great. I'm not going to get too far into it, but The food was great, and the country store was still there. And buddy, I even went to the one in Roseville, if that tells you anything. It's not like I'm getting down south, you know, hitting I-75 down to Tennessee, but it was good. I don't really have much to say about it, but I checked it out. There was literally nothing changed, but the one thing they didn't have was like the $20 and $30 avocado toast and like silly brunch, stuff like that. It was very strict, like pancakes, waffles, bacon, and they nailed it. But
cast iron all over the place.
Yeah,
I didn't even know what a rocking chair was until I started going to Cracker Barrel.
Yeah, it's nice. It's a nice time, man. So what, I don't even know how we got onto that, but we're talking Red Wings and content.
We were talking about covering up a bad waffle with whipped cream.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. See, that's a perfect segue for some of these contract news that have been coming out, right? So recently, I think it was Kaprizov with the Minnesota Wild. Elliot Friedman, maybe, I don't know who reported on it, but I heard it online, is that he declined to sign an 8-year, like $16 million a year, 128 total bag for our guy Kaprizov from the Wild. So I wanted to get your opinion on that.
My opinion on that is you're going to get that money anywhere now. They've set a standard with that offer. You're playing in a city in Minnesota that, by all accounts, has had a pretty average team for a long time. It's cold weather, not a lot that draws you there. If you set a standard at $16 million a year, would you stay in Minnesota for no real reason? Or would you try to go to a winning team like Vegas, which is tax-free, Tampa, Florida, which is tax-free? Do the math on the taxes. Do the math on the taxes. You can take $3-4 million less and still make more and be in warm weather.
Brad Marchand just came out and said that was the whole reason they were able to re-sign everybody. And if it wasn't a no state tax where they could all take less, that he and two or three other guys just wouldn't have been able to be re-signed.
Well, and this is another thing I love, and this is why I love that we have these conversations, Mike, is because from an athlete's perspective as well, I think everybody that's listening can tell you that their body feels way better in warm weather than cold weather. So if you're signing an 8-year deal in warm weather, it's less wear and tear on your body. Your body feels better. You may get a couple years more out of your body. And
you can drive that Ferrari year round. Have you ever tried to put snow tires on a Lamborghini SUV, buddy? It doesn't work.
And overall happiness. I can tell you this right now. When you leave the rink and you're able to go golf and you're able to stay active, you feel a lot better on the ice than when you go, you know, you're stuck in your house. You leave the rink, you go home and you sit inside in a dingy dark. It's, you know, cold weather.
We love cold weather. We love the dark and the sad and the gloom and all that shit. We love it.
I think people say they love it. And I can honestly disagree. I can tell you, living in Florida, that everybody is generally happier in warm weather than being stuck inside. And I'll say this, I would rather have to go inside because it's too hot out than be stuck inside because it's too cold out. And, you know, and it sounds silly, but think about guys in Minnesota who have to scrape their windshields before they go to the rink and you have to put 14 layers of clothes on. It's a totally different feel. And, you know, like I said, you can go golf, you can stay active, you can do things. So now you find that life balance between hockey and work, which is essentially hockey in real life. If things aren't going well at the rink, you have other things that you can put your mind to. And that it happens a lot in the minor leagues and other places where when you're in a cold weather state or you're in, it's not a great hockey situation, what do? You go home and you're sitting in a dark room.
Rolling most guys Twitter. Are you see it scrolling to it. Hates you.
Playing video games and that's all you think about and it tends to really you carry that on your chest a lot longer than, you know, guys are in tough hockey situations. Well, we're still going to play 18 this afternoon. How bad can it be?
No, dude, that makes absolute sense. When it's probably much easier to be able to leave work at work or leave the game at the rink when you've got, you know, a beautiful day outside versus when you're in the hockey season. In the middle of February, you go outside and it's minus 20 Fahrenheit. And, you know, that's you can't escape even the feeling of ice hockey when you're out and about. And truth be told, a lot of these places like Minnesota and not even really so much Detroit now, but more the northern and even Canadian markets. If you go outside, people are taking notice. You're much more easily recognized walking around St. Paul than you are, you know, Miami, right? There's a lot more eyes on you as a hockey player in the northern markets. You won't be able to escape it. Look at Mitch Marner, right? The whole Toronto fiasco where he was having people threaten him in Toronto, the media on his back. He goes to Vegas. Look, listen, I'm sure he's a nice guy. He looked like a huge nerd when he was like putting his jersey on. He had his hands up and all this stuff, but he looked so much happier. I mean, he was tan, he was carefree.
Well, and we lived in the same building, and he is a great guy. He's a really good guy. When I was in Toronto, he was obviously with the big club. I was with the AHL, but we lived in the same building. But let me ask you, Mike, let's talk about the last, I don't know, 7 or 8 Stanley Cup champions.
Yeah.
Tampa, Florida, Vegas, warm weather makes it a lot easier to have that team camaraderie. Guys are hanging out outside of the rink. Cold weather, guys are going home. They're not leaving their house again. So it makes it a lot easier to build that team chemistry and things like that. And I don't think it's by chance that warm weather teams are winning a lot more Stanley Cups in fun cities. And, you know, you're talking about a guy like Mitch Marner. Let's not forget, he's going to the city of comps. You know how easy it is to get comps in the city of Vegas? You think those guys are paying for meals? You think, well, you're about
I'm
to find
a full
out,
price
but
guy.
You're a full price Delta guy, but you're about to find out. But those guys are getting comped meals, and they're getting, I know Marceau was getting like a Ferrari to drive to the rink for free. Like, that is a city for comp. So that all plays into an athlete's decisions too, you know?
You don't have to be cutting commercials for Big Al's car a lot. You can actually be in the mix, getting your marketing getting your marketing and advertising handled by large agencies in popular areas and with significant monetary benefits aside from just having no sales tax.
For sure. And there's huge perks to that.
Yeah. When guys don't sign though, so Kaprizov specifically, we'll use him as an example, gets offered a huge ticket, doesn't sign it, allegedly. Do guys in the room take notice of that? Are they thinking like, well, he's not sticking around, or is it, you know, that's his business, and while he's here, or guys, I would think, at least have to take notice of that.
I think guys take notice, but when you're the superstar, what are the third and fourth liners going to say? He didn't sign. I'm not going to play for him.
Yeah.
He is the superstar, right?
And that's the thing. They've built around him. He's the identity on that team.
Exactly. So, you know, it's hard for anybody else on the team to question him or his decisions. I mean, I'm sure it plays into it, but I think if anything, that makes guys want to play harder to like show him, to prove to him, hey, you know, you need to stay here and we need to have a good year. Minnesota needs to have a good year. We need to try to keep this guy here, right? This is the way the business goes. And we saw it with Stamkos.
Yeah.
Nobody owes anybody anything. And it's a business on both ends. Like,
that was horrendous.
I don't want to say this, but
that was a horrendous thing with Stamkos and was a Julien Brisebois. That was disgusting how he was treated.
It's terrible. And I've talked about it actually with Bubba a few times, Bubba the Love Sponge. We tend to talk hockey and talk sports. He's a big Tampa fan. Just sad. Very, very sad. But that's the nature of the beast. And when we talk in that, like, he doesn't owe Minnesota anything. Krill the Thrill doesn't owe Minnesota anything. He needs to do what's best for him, because at the end of the day, Minnesota's going to do what's best for them. You know, if he wasn't performing and he was on a huge ticket, they're not just going to pay him $16 million for the fun of it. If he has 10 points, they're going to buy him out, or they're going to ship him off. They don't care. It's in. We talked about it earlier. It's not what you did yesterday. It's what you're doing now.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Stamkos built that Tampa franchise. He literally put that franchise on his back, was everything, did nothing wrong. He wasn't a problem off the ice. He wasn't, you know, a bad leader.
Even when Barry Melrose benched him his like entire first year and made him ride the bike after every game. Still stuck around. Didn't have to.
You look at a leader like that, and that's the reason that organization had the success they did.
Yep. Yeah. So, okay. Quick hot take. Does Kaprizov sign in Minnesota? Yes or no?
No.
No, I don't think he does either. There's, I don't think so at all.
I'm going on the record and saying if he was going to sign in Minnesota, you get an offer like $16 million. You're already signed. You're not leaving it to chance.
So I think my theory is that he's waiting for McDavid to reset the market and thinks he can get a little bit more. So if he sets it at, we'll say 16, then McDusty sets it at 17 or 18 or even 20, then his comp is going to look lower or whatever. So I don't know if he's holding out for a reason like that, or if he's holding out for another team to make a similar offer where it's instead of 16 years at 8 or whatever, he's doing 5 years at 20 for a team that where he wants to be, either, in my opinion, maybe Florida. I mean, they always seem to get it done. Vegas, they seem to get it done. And the dark horse, which I think is actually a big player, and it's going to be the New York Rangers.
Yeah, well, I will say the Russians love Florida. They love the warm weather. You see a lot of them have come down here. A lot of them spend their summers here in Fort Lauderdale, more and more of them. And they build a little community. I mean, you know, rightfully so. If we went to a European country, I would tend to hang out with the Americans too, but the Russians stick together, you know. And obviously there's a couple big time Russians that are on the Florida team down here. So that's very interesting.
Yeah.
I don't want to disagree with your take. You know, I love my Russians. I love the Europeans and they love money, but I don't think he's holding out to try to get an extra million or to see the reset of the market. And once again, I mean, they're building the NHL around McDavid. Is, you know, the player that Krill is, he still doesn't carry or get the attention that McDavid does, right? So I don't think he can necessarily compare himself to McDavid. And I also don't think that he's waiting to try to see what McDavid signs for to try to match that. I think he doesn't want to just come out and say, I'm not re-signing here. So he's trying to slow roll it. But he definitely, in my opinion, he has some other plans. And you know, you mentioned a place like New York City. I mean, that's a city where you have fashion, you have food, you're treated like a celebrity. You know, there's celebrities at every game there. That's also very
blend in too in New York City. Like hockey players probably don't get recognized nearly as much as a lot of the other celebrities that are there. And if they do, there's so many well-known people that it's like, well, there's Steve Alexi again. Not a big deal, you know?
And there's a lot of culture in that city too, which generally makes those Europeans feel more comfortable when they're away from home.
Yeah, definitely. So McDavid's situation and Kaprizov's situation, obviously a little different. However, they both beg the question, if this is how elite players are going to approach their extensions, are they open to signing more team-friendly deals to allow for that roster construction, those extra players? Mm-hmm. Are they just simply looking to push for the max value?
I guess it depends on the player. You know, everything I've seen for that, nevertheless. Everything I've seen over the last, you know, 5 to 10 years, other than, you know, a couple guys that I think we all know, nobody's taken a team-friendly deal. Nobody cares that much. You know, as much as it's a team game and a team sport, it's me, not team.
When it comes to the business side.
Yeah, it's me, not we.
And you also have to hope, let's say you're the captain, you take a team-friendly deal, you shave off $3-4 million, whatever. Am I going to do the same as your second line right winger? You know what I mean? Or am I going to say, yeah, I don't know, let me push for that? And then to take it a step further, are the GMs in the front office even going to make the right plays and the right picks? Say we do take all the team-friendly deals and whoever name your GM doesn't make the right move or severely overpays an underperformer. Now I'm stuck making... You know, and I'm not saying, listen, it's funny to say all this because I'm not making, you know, I would be thrilled with an NHL league minimum. Trust me, you know, but at what point is enough enough? And how many guys are going to take team friendly deals to chase that cup? And I don't know that McDavid will. Yeah. I don't know. I don't think he should be expected to, quite frankly. But as a loyalty guy, as a team first guy, as a guy who's never played the game professionally, yes, I'm taking less to make sure that everybody can eat. And let's go win a cup or two or three.
Yeah, but you take that team-friendly deal and exactly what you said. If you're not in there, if you're not hand-in-hand with the GM signing the players, you don't control what they do. You know, and then once again, you know, how does that sit with you when you are literally the face of the NHL and you lead the league in points and then you have, you know, a second or third liner on another team making the same money as you? You know, that's tough to swallow.
Well, it also adjusts the market. So if you're a high performer, you take less money, Now they're going to look at your comps and say, hey, McDavid's scoring 50, 60 a year. You're only scoring 15, so we're not paying you anywhere near what you deserve even a couple years ago, if that makes sense.
No, it definitely makes sense. But, you know, even if you take a team-friendly deal too, there's no guarantee with Stanley Cups and there's no guarantee with team success.
To be fair, you only have one more than I do.
That's very true. But I know one thing, you have more senior league championships than I do.
And yeah,
more than I ever will too, Mike, more than I ever will.
I don't think so. Yeah. It's as soon as your kids start getting a little bit older, you need to sign back up and get back in the mix with these beer leagues and adult leagues and even drop-ins. I mean, you still got it, Stevie. I know that you're the first guy to say, oh, no, whatever. And kind of downplay your success, but you were still very much in the mix at the pro level at ESC over the summer. So I don't want to hear it.
Yeah, the less the feet work, the smarter the brain works.
Well, yeah, and buddy, I think we went through the 50-gallon drum of show sponsor Lactigo for you, too, after that one game versus Skimmers.
Yeah, oh.
Yeah.
I needed to take a bath in that after that game.
Buddy, do you think McDavid takes a team-friendly deal, or do you think he goes max value, or do you think he doesn't sign and goes to a different team?
If I'm McDavid, I can't speak on McDavid because I don't know him at all personally, but if I'm McDavid, I think you've given Edmonton enough opportunity to try to put something together, a winning team.
They went to the finals 2 years in a row, Stephen. So, I mean, they're a winning team.
Yeah, they're a winning team, but they haven't won it, right? So it comes down to who you are as a person, if you want to stay loyal to a franchise that has, you know, rebuilt around you, or you see it in basketball where all these guys join super teams, right? Do you try to go to a team with a couple other superstars where it's not, you know, he has Dreisaitl and a couple other guys, but, you know, imagine if he goes to Colorado with McKinnon and a couple other guys and they really make a serious run at it, right?
So I think there are superstars to make an all-star team the way they do in like the NBA anymore, buddy. There's just not that many guys.
There's not that many guys, but part of that is the expansion too, right? With all this new expansion and things like that, the talent pool is becoming watered down and, you know, all the way down every year. It seems like there's a team, two teams, you know, East Coast League is introducing new teams. The American League's introducing new teams. The NHL is introducing new teams.
Is the SPHL still around?
The SPHL is
They're
still around.
And so is new teams.
The Federal Hockey League, and everybody's a pro hockey player, and it starts at the youth level too. And this is a very deep conversation we'll probably have to tackle on another podcast.
Sure.
But nowadays you don't have the talent pool is very lopsided. You have the superior athletes and the guys who, you know, struggle with the basics. There's not a lot of in between anymore, right? Because we've taken out playing hockey for the enjoyment and the fun of it. It's either you eat, sleep, breathe, and you skate four times a day during the summer, or you may as well not play, right? So there's not that in between anymore. And you see that a lot at the pro levels too. You're here or here. The in-betweeners are just, they're replaceable. So every year there's six to seven new forwards on a team and 3 to 4 new D on a team. And then they just rinse and repeat with the younger guys that they're getting for league minimums. So,
yeah, well, it's just like in the corporate world, Stevie, right? Who can I get to do the same thing at a cheaper price with less overhead and less problems, right? Hockey's not immune.
And if that guy doesn't work, we'll try another one. And if that guy doesn't work, sooner or later, somebody's going to work.
Yeah, especially at that level. I mean, we were even talking about both the Tkachuks. Just how everybody is fawning over these guys and their playing style. And it's like, yeah, that was how the game was played forever up until, I don't know, maybe the lockout, it started to change then when they're starting to make the game a little less physical, a little faster. There's more spots for the Quinn Hughes, the 5'7", 5'9 guys, puck moving guys that maybe don't have that. And listen, Quinn Hughes, big fan of the show. I know he is. He's probably listening. I'm not attacking him. I'm just saying that that is how the game was always played forever. And now we see it in a different light. And the guys who can be even just a little physical, tend to rise up a lot faster and get noticed.
Yeah, I think because there's so few of those guys. And I think football kind of started this trend with when guys started coming out with CTE and concussion issues. The NHL is trying to get ahead of it right now. If they were to say there's no fight, and they've already done this in junior hockey and a number of other leagues where they either limit it or there's no fighting at all. And with the suspensions on hits and, you know, what used to be a clean hit, you know, is now a 6 to 8 game suspension. And you look at a guy like Tom Wilson who throws the body around, he's always a clean hit. He's tiptoeing the line every time now. So, you know, it's easier for him to just not do it than to risk that.
But when I saw Tom Wilson at the Alzner Summer Swing into Summer Alzner Foundation event, I was like, that is a big boy, dude. He's how tall? He's like 6'4", 6'5". Is shredded. I was like, oh, I get it now, you know?
He's a big boy. He's a man child. When he first came to us in Washington, I drove him around. He came to us from Plymouth and we were staying in the same spot. So we became really good. And one of the best, just an unbelievable human being too.
Good to hear.
But yeah, he was a man child. But when you look at that, you know, they can't pull the contact out. They can't say, oh, there's no hitting, and they can't say there's no fighting, because the fan base that they have left is going to be up in arms. And that's kind of what gives hockey its identity. Although, you know, there's not a lot of fighting or real fighting anymore.
Oh, we'll just make some more silly influencer TikTok clips. Let's just keep marketing that. That'll be great.
Yeah. Here, no kid. So what they've done is they've changed the personnel. So now, you know, now you're looking at, you know, every D-man can skate like the wind and they do 14 cutbacks and you don't have that Chris Pronger who's cross-checking you in the ribs. You know, it's easy enough to, oh, that guy, I was there, but I didn't want to hurt him. And, you know, he puts it in an empty net rather than abusing him. You know, I don't say that word lightly, but, you know, cross-checks and things like that, you know, they've gone more to the European style game with, you know, no hitting, everybody can skate. And it's,
and that's, listen, I'm not saying it's right or wrong, right? And I don't think you are either. It's just different.
It's a different hockey. It's not what, you know, a majority of us grew up watching, right? It's not a majority. When we were growing up watching the Red Wings and you had the Proberts and the Koshers, you know, the score could be 7-4 and there was 3 fights and Probert's uppercutting the goalie and, you know, somebody's running the goalie.
Yeah, there's got to be a middle ground, right? We probably shouldn't go back to the league of the 80s.
For sure. But it was entertaining. And nowadays, you know, your star player gets bumped and a guy goes and grabs the other guy from behind and they rustle and tussle and their gloves are on. And, you know, it's hard to watch.
No,
to
I get it,
you.
Buddy. I get it.
But they've changed the personnel, you know, to get back to it, they've changed the personnel instead of changing the rules to eliminate the contact and to eliminate the fighting and things that could ultimately bring on, we saw it in NFL with lawsuits, but bring on some, you know, Dan Carcillo is a guy who was, you know,
very
outspoken as far as the NHL and the measures they took to protect guys from concussions.
Yeah, so, listen, I'm a safety first guy, but the fact of the matter is that it's a contact sport and every single person who's ever played the game from youth through adult knows the inherent risks in hockey, right? So that's part of it. And quite frankly, ask any hockey player before they get on the ice, they've got the iron butterflies at any league, at any game, at any point in time. You're always nervous because you do know what could happen.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think that's a conversation for another podcast as well. Yeah,
I mean, they teach the game differently too, right? The onus was on the guy carrying the puck, and that's just not what it is anymore.
Not anymore. A guy cuts across the middle with his head down and gets hit, and it's on the guy who hit him, right? Or a guy's trying to do 4 cutbacks and gets bumped from behind headfirst into the boards, and it's on the guy who bumped him. It's definitely changed from that perspective, and guys are just so much faster and stronger, and recovery methods are so much greater than they used to be, and everybody's working out now. Equipment is so far advanced from what it used to be, where guys, you know,
we're not using the Sherwood 50-30 coffee curve anymore.
Yeah, that was my curve.
Yeah, mine too, buddy. I still got one in the garage.
I set her career high with 4 goals 1 year and squirted with that.
Good team were you in squirts?
Great Lakes Panthers.
Let me think. Squirt. I was with the DePonios. I was on the Hawks with DePonio and Chris Shankey. Shout out Chris Shankey. But anyway, you were talking about talent and how the league's kind of been watered down a little bit. There's one player in particular that just got traded, not just, but pretty recently from Tampa to Edmonton by the name of Isaac Howard. He was last year's Hobie Baker winner. With that type of pedigree, do you think that he slides into a top six role with McDavid pretty quick, or are they going to keep him sheltered, let him develop through being a role player? Because I don't think that he's definitely not getting sent down. And I don't know enough about Isaac Howard. Does come through the Michigan State program, obviously an incredible talent. Is he going to gel with McDavid's leadership style, who's kind of that quiet leader who you follow, versus Isaac Howard, who at the draft said he was the best looking guy and the best dressed guy there? Isaac Howard, I'm not sure how he'll do. The Hobie Baker pedigree, he's obviously got the confidence. I wish him well. He could be the missing piece. We're saying that's exactly what teams need, are those young guys that are on entry-level deals that can contribute early and often. And that's why the Wings were always doing well with when we had our third and fourth lines, our young guys. I mean, in 2002, Pavel Datsyuk was first or second year. Same thing with Henrik Zetterberg. So those are the type of players that you need to be successful in the league. One of those players, Lane Hutson. Now, I know we're a little late on this, Stevie, but I know you saw it. So Lane Hutson, Calder Trophy winner. He was not invited to USA Hockey's Olympic orientation camp. His dad, Rob, publicly criticized the omission. I don't know what Bill Guerin was thinking. He obviously doesn't know Lane. He also commented that the family has strong ties not only to USA Hockey, but that they have four sons and could theoretically play for Team Canada, saying, "You never know what happens in the future." What are you doing, Rob Hutson?
Rob, I've had a lot of dealings.
I know you know the guy, so you don't have to comment. If you'd rather not say anything, I can speak for myself and myself only, not Steve. That's insane. That is insane.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've dealt with him quite a bit, and the one thing I will say is he's very passionate, and you know, I think the biggest comparison that we can make in this day and age to a statement like that and to a father like that, obviously he believes in his son, and you know, he has a right to say that. For me personally, I'd probably go about it a little bit differently, because there's no quicker way to, let's face it, there is favoritism is in the sport, and there's
politics.
There's politics and guys get blacklisted. And I think that's a quick way to do so. When you talk about Rob, he's a hockey guy through and through. He's very involved in youth sports. He's had very successful teams. He's participated in some of our events. You know, and he's an old school mindset. We talk about old school hockey, and he's hardcore. And he's passionate and loves his kids. And you know, he spoke out about it. And, you know, if we turn back the clock a little bit, there was a guy who everybody thought he was crazy, and Mr. Ball, you know, when you talk about him and his sons, you know, he was very outspoken about his sons. And you know, we look at them now, and they've found their success and things like that. But I think it was a little bit harder for them to break through. And, you know,
is that in spite of a father figure or a father or a mother, did that push them and help them towards making the leagues, or did they do that despite that?
I think they did that despite that, right? And I think Lane's established himself in the NHL.
Yeah, Calder Trophy. How you doing?
But that being said, some of the extras, like, you know, Four Nations or, you know, the Olympics and things like that, that may be a stretch unless he continues on the same trajectory and, you know, continues to do that. If he falls at all, I think, you know, it's going to kind of come back to the words his father said. You know, the thing is with this sport is they're looking for reasons to, I always tell young kids this, they're looking for reasons to get rid of you, not for reasons to keep you. And I always encourage guys, never give them a reason to get rid of you, right? You have to do things, you can do things right 99% of the time, but that 1% is what they're going to live on, right?
Yeah. Well, arguably, if, go ahead, I'm sorry, buddy.
No, if Lane falls off at all now, they're going to point back to the comments that were made. And now they have a reason to justify their decisions in the future.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I do think that he was, I'll say arguably, the most surprising omission from the team or the Olympic orientation camp. His comments were pretty straightforward, but calling out Bill Guerin saying you don't know what he's thinking. It's not up to you to know what he's thinking, first off.
But yeah, and I'll say one more thing. And like I said, Rob's a father above all and believes in his children, which you can respect.
And I
love that. But, you know, on the other end, I can speak. I think Lane handled it very well. You know, so as an athlete, I think he handled it very, from a very mature standpoint, understanding that's a fine line too when you're speaking about your father and comments he made and you're trying to defend him, but you're also trying to not play into what he said. I think Lane, as a young athlete, handled that the best he could in a very mature manner. And I think if I was, you know, part of Team USA or, you know, even coaching staff in Montreal, I would give him a lot of credit for the way he handled things that he ultimately can't control that his father said, right? So that's a little shout out to Lane. I think he handled it correctly. And I think that could be a great learning tool for a lot of kids because it happens in youth sports too, right?
And it happens more so in youth sports.
Exactly. Youth sports, your parents are going. It happened to me in college where my dad went and talked to the coach in college. I was just happy to be there. And he said, hey, you ever think about putting Steve on the power play? Well, yeah. I can tell you what happened the next 3 years. Didn't go in my favor, I'll tell you that.
That's
so
hilarious. I think, love that too.
Yeah. Just because a coach says, yeah, my door's always open, doesn't mean the door's always open. Parents, listen.
Absolutely. And you know what, CB, I think guys, even at the youth level and up to the NHL level, they know, they get it. They've seen dads, they know the player. It's a story that we as now members of the media probably perpetuate a little too much instead of just letting it go. Because, I mean, Rob's not a spokesman for anybody other than himself, right? And I think guys understand that, especially at the NHL level.
You'd be surprised because, like I said, it gives them an excuse and it justifies decisions that they want to make, right? And it always gives them an out. And, you know, the one thing that I would like to speak on the youth level is who's around an athlete more than the parents? So if the parents are saying this stuff and that's what the kid's hearing, generally they tend to fall into that thinking too, right? So they start to, you know, if a parent's mad because their kid's not getting enough power play time, well, now the kid has a bad attitude going into the rink because he feels he should be on the power play more and things like that. To bring it all back to home base, Lane handled it the right way. He handled it very professionally, and it gave me a new respect for him as an athlete.
Fortunately, my parents were more so on the coaching side growing up. They were always removed from that, which is a positive. Let me succeed on my own and fail on my own, much like I'm sure Bulldog and Sue did for you, buddy.
No, Bulldog was my coach most of my life. And I can tell you about 90% of the games, it was either me or him leaving the bench. So
you won it despite, much like LaMelo Ball and all those guys, right?
Exactly.
Know, dude, even like there's a video of Mitch Marner's dad when he's like 9 years old, 10 years old, just absolutely lacing into him from outside the bench. And yes, we need to have this be another podcast where we talk more about the issues in youth sports because, buddy, there are many. We both grew up playing the game. You obviously continued your career a little bit more. I got into coaching. So I was coaching for a solid 10 years and was very lucky on my specific team to coach with an amazing guy in John Bartoy and have incredible parents that were on that team. But you could look at every single other team in the league, and it was ridiculous how parents acted towards kids, towards the coaches, and most of all, towards the referees.
And I think that's one thing that I think parents need fresh reminders constantly about is, you know, coming from a professional athlete, when it's your job, it's not always fun. It's, you know, it's a job. A lot of times it's not very much fun at all. You know, aside from people with what they think, as far as it's just, you know, you show up, you play hockey for a living, it's amazing, and the bright lights and the mental side of it, really, there's a lot of wear and tear and changes you as a person and changes you emotionally. Why are we going to bring that to a 7 and 8 year old who ultimately is more than likely playing for the love of the game and for the fun? And I think the one thing that parents fail to realize too is with fun, comes success. And the more fun your kid is having, the more he wants to go to the rink, the more he enjoys it, the more success he's going to have, the more he's going to put into the game. When you're yelling and screaming at him, when he's playing, that's what's running through his head. He's not going to go shoot pucks because it's not fun. It's a bad reminder of all the things that are being said to him and all the criticism that they're taking on from the parents and from the coaches. And then refs are, that's a whole nother topic. I mean, everybody complains about how expensive hockey is. Well, we can't get anybody to ref. And so now the guys who are reffing, they can charge a premium because you have to have them. And, you know, ultimately, the one thing that players and parents don't understand is generally these refs are moving up the ladder with your young athlete too.
Yeah,
so
same ones.
We had guys that were reffing the summer league, and you know, high school guys or college guys were, you know, less than nice to these people. And then they get them during the season, and now guys are getting 2-10s, and it's leading back to the summer league, you know. So the refs are growing with your kids. I can tell you this right now. People criticize NHL refs. So refs are going to make mistakes at every level. So it doesn't do you any good to scream and yell. And ultimately, when they see parents and coaches yelling at the refs, that becomes a habit for the kids. And it's normalized now because the parents are doing it and the coaches are doing it. So now what that does is that becomes a habit for your young athlete. And now he feels it's okay to yell at the refs. And ultimately, that never goes well the more you move on. And you know, as you grow as a hockey player and the higher level you play, they'll just get rid of you.
Yeah, man. The motivation has to come from within if you're a young player. That's just what it is. So your parents, you can have all the support in the world, both positive and negative reinforcement, but it has to come from within. People can never be externally motivated by anything. The only motivation that really forces people up and out has to come from within. If you want to succeed in anything, whether it's hockey or life, you have to find a way to be self-motivated.
Yeah. And I think as you talk about self-motivation, there are different motivators for each person. And I think to have success, you have to understand what motivates you personally, right? I think for me, what motivated me to ultimately have success isn't the same that motivates everybody else.
Yeah, of course.
We talked about money earlier on in the conversation. Money wasn't my motivator. Proving people wrong was my motivation, you know? But so many people will pretend that this motivates them, and that's not the case.
Yeah.
And now they're lying to themselves, and ultimately that doesn't lead to success either.
Or they just, quite frankly, don't know what motivates them because they've never actually sat down and given themselves that self-examination of how am I operating? Am I doing this because somebody else wants me to? What fuels me? What fills my cup? And yeah, people sometimes they don't even know what motivates them.
Yeah. And I think the other thing where youth athletes and athletes in general fall off is they step into the door with an expectation. And I say this all the time, expectations are a career killer. When they step in and they expect this and, you know, that, now it becomes, you should give this to me rather than I'm going to work for this. And it's a very, it puts you in a very different mindset and a very different mental
space.
I'm sure
you've seen it at the highest levels, Stevie. Being around
the
game
time.
Exactly.
All the time.
But we're getting a little long, so we're going to just jump right here. A couple quick hits, yes, no answers, or give me a little bit. And then if we've got anything else, so quick rapid fire. Stevie, I appreciate you being here. Best jersey that you've seen, either Centennial, reverse retros, whatever. What's your favorite jersey?
I'm a big Blackhawks jersey fan, I think.
It's the worst. And there's literally one wrong answer.
Yeah, well, we agree to disagree. As far as New Age, I think Vegas has done a great job branding with their, you know, their color scheme is unique. Their logo's cool and it fits the city very well. So I do enjoy Vegas. And I'd say those are probably two of my favorite jerseys.
Yeah.
At this time.
So I've gotten some feedback on the different jerseys that I've been wearing. So I'm going to keep trying to go. So, I mean, we did Argentina. I had a Charlie Conway one on the other day. This one, I want to give a quick shout to our boys on the Tokyo Canadiens. It's actually so sick, man. So my buddy Joji skates for him. He's skated for him forever. We traded jerseys when, I don't know where we were skating at, probably actually in Cairo. which sounds crazy. I met him in Egypt. But yeah, so Tokyo Canadians, if you have a jersey that you want to send me that you want to be seen on the pod, we'll do a nice little clip. DM the show, DM myself, and let's make it happen. Okay, second one, Kaprizov, signing in Minnesota. You already answered, but let's call back.
I'd say no. I think he's exploring his options. He's going to get paid anywhere he goes. Minnesota set a standard with their offer. I think he's chasing warm weather and in city life.
Okay, I'm going to say...
I don't know him personally, so no, I can't speak to that. But listen, I'm going to throw a dart at the dartboard. Thrill the Thrill is going to Vegas, and he's going to take the city by storm.
Vegas, how about this? I'm going to throw a dark horse no one's mentioned yet, Nashville. No state tax, warm area. I think they're going to have some salary room. I actually have no idea on that.
And obviously, you don't know many Russians, Mike, because they're not big country music. They're more EDMs.
Yeah, but yeah.
I think... D&G, designer everything.
And then finally, Isaac Howard's upside. Does he make a push for the Calder this year?
We'll see.
Yeah, I don't we'll see. That see. I don't know enough about him yet.
I think, you know, it's, there's, I don't know. Once again, I don't know him personally. So this is just, there's confidence and cocky.
Yeah.
When you make certain statements, there's, you know, that comes with a certain expectation. And we just talked about expectation. We saw it in the NFL draft, you know, not too long ago. I can't disagree. And I think, you know, by all accounts, I think it's a lot of the way he acted and what he said. It just puts too much pressure on an organization, right? So we'll see what happens there. I mean, he definitely has a supporting cast to allow him to step in and make a big impact. He has, you know, some high level talent around him, you know, so it is a different game, but we'll see how the adjustment from, I think, from juniors to college to pros, it's a big jump. It's a big jump, but he does have a support system there, so it'll be interesting to see.
So I'm going to say yes. Mark it down. Yes, he makes it. He makes a push for it. I don't know if he's going to win it. Who knows it all right now? So
I guess you need to define push, because I think there's only a small little rookie class that could actually make a push towards that trophy. Matthew I'll say Schneider. Yes with you.
I think Matthew Schaefer. Yeah, he just had a sick back check on.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw that, but I will say it's a lot harder for D-man jumping into the league to make a huge impact than it is for a forward jumping into the league. So we'll see. And Edmonton versus the Islanders, a little bit easier to have a lot more success with Edmonton. So
yeah, who was the last defenseman? Oh, Lane Hudson. Never mind. It was the last D-man to win, and that was literally last year. So, all right, Stevie, I don't want to keep you away from everything that you got going on any longer. Do you have anything else before we wrap it up and get out of here?
Play hard, have fun.
Play hard, have fun.
You can edit that.
No, buddy. Play hard, have fun. Thank you, HealthQuest Physical Therapy. Check them out online. And as always, Lactico.com, code OLEXI, 10% off. Hit us up on Instagram, DM us, let us know your favorite jerseys, your least favorite jerseys, what you think. You can find it at the number 61SOEL. It's the 61 Soul Podcast. I'm Bam Bam Baitinger.
I'm Steve.
And he's Steve Alexi. We'll catch you on the next one. Thank you.
I thought you were going to hit me with the Steve O'Peachy, but
I'm okay.
You
know, what you
want to say?
I'm Bam Bam Baitinger, and that's Stevie O'Peachy. We're the 61 Soul Podcast. Check us out. Later.